The next sutta is Sangyutta 35, sutta number 235. It's called the Exposition on Burning. In my little notes that I've made, it's a good little note for myself, isn't it? Makes the fire sermon sound lame. Bhikkhus, I will teach you a Dhamma exposition on the theme of burning. Listen to that. And what, bhikkhus, is the Dhamma exposition on the theme of burning? It would be better, bhikkhus, for the eye faculty be lacerated by a red-hot iron pin, burning, blazing, and glowing, than for one to grasp the sign through the features in a form cognizable by the eye. For if consciousness should stand tied to gratification in the sign or in the features, or if one should die on that occasion, it is possible that one will go to one of two destinations, hell or the animal realm. Having seen this danger, I speak thus. It would be better, bhikkhus, for the ear faculty to be lacerated by a sharp iron stake, burning, blazing, and glowing, than for one to grasp the sign through the features in a sound cognizable by the ear. For if consciousness should stand tied to gratification in the sign or in the features, or if one should die on that occasion, it is possible that one will go to one of two destinations, hell or the animal realm. Having seen this danger, I speak thus. It would be better, bhikkhus, for the nose faculty to be lacerated by a sharp nail cutter, burning, blazing, and glowing, than for one to grasp the sign through the features in an odor cognizable by the nose. For if consciousness should stand tied to gratification in the sign or in the features, or if one should die on that occasion, it is possible that one will go to one of two destinations, hell or the animal realm. Having seen this danger, I speak thus. It would be better, bhikkhus, for the tongue faculty to be lacerated by a sharp razor, burning, blazing, and glowing, than for one to grasp the sign through the features in a taste cognizable by the tongue. For if consciousness should stand tied to gratification in the sign or in the features, or if one should die on that occasion, it is possible that one will go to one of two destinations, hell or the animal realm. Having seen this danger, I speak thus. It would be better, bhikkhus, for the body faculty to be lacerated by a sharp spear, burning, blazing, and glowing, than for one to grasp the sign through the features in a tactile object cognizable by the body. For if consciousness should stand tied to gratification in the sign or in the features, or if one should die on that occasion, it is possible that one will go to one of two destinations, hell or the animal realm. Having seen this danger, I speak thus. It would be better, bhikkhus, to sleep. For sleep, I say, is barren for the living, fruitless for the living, insensibility for the living, than to think such thoughts as would induce one who has come under their control to bring about a schism in the Sangha. Having seen this danger, I speak thus. In regard to this, bhikkhus, the instructed noble disciple reflects thus. Leave off lacerating the eye faculty with a red-hot iron pin, burning, blazing, and glowing. Let me attend only to this. So the eye is impermanent, forms are impermanent, eye consciousness is impermanent, eye contact is impermanent. Whatever feeling arises with eye contact as condition, whether pleasant or painful, or neither painful nor pleasant, that too is impermanent. Leave off lacerating the ear faculty with a sharp iron stake, burning, blazing, and glowing. Let me attend only to this. So the ear is impermanent, sounds are impermanent, ear consciousness is impermanent, ear contact is impermanent. Whatever feeling arises with ear contact as condition, that too is impermanent. Leave off lacerating the nose faculty with a sharp nail cutter, burning, blazing, and glowing. Let me attend only to this. So the nose is impermanent. Odors are impermanent. Nose consciousness is impermanent. Nose contact is impermanent. Whatever feeling arises with nose contact as condition, that too is impermanent. Leave off lacerating the tongue faculty with a sharp razor, burning, blazing, and glowing. Let me attend only to this. So the tongue is impermanent. Tastes are impermanent. Tongue consciousness is impermanent. Tongue contact is impermanent. Whatever feeling arises with tongue contact as condition, that too is impermanent. Leave off lacerating the body faculty with a sharp spear, burning, blazing, and glowing. Let me attend only to this. So the body is impermanent. Tactile objects are impermanent. Body consciousness is impermanent. Body contact is impermanent. Whatever feeling arises with body contact as condition, that too is impermanent. Leave off sleeping. Let me attend only to this. So the mind is impermanent. Mental phenomena are impermanent. Mind consciousness is impermanent. Mind contact is impermanent. Whatever feeling arises with mind contact as condition, that too is impermanent. Seeing thus, bhikkhus, the instructed noble disciple experiences disenchantment towards the eye, forms, eye consciousness, eye contact, and whatever feeling arises with eye contact as condition, whether pleasant or painful, or neither painful nor pleasant. And then through all the sense bases toward the mind, mental phenomena, mind consciousness, mind contact, and whatever feeling arises with mind contact as condition, experiencing disenchantment, he becomes dispassionate. Through dispassion, his mind is liberated. When it is liberated, there comes the knowledge, it's liberated. He understands, destroyed his birth, the holy life has been lived, what had to be done has been done. There is no more for this state of being. This, bhikkhus, is the Dhamma exposition on the theme of burning. Okay, so rather unequivocal. Yeah.
Yeah.
The Buddha that comes up on many occasions. I mean, the thing is that one is fixated and obsessed, and then one dies in that condition.
Keeping the precepts isn't a guarantee of human rebirth. It's just a
It's a major condition.
Is it a little bit different than as you look at the signs through the features? You said through the features. How is that different than, because usually the signs will grasp and the signs were the features.
I mean, I think it's there's a I mean, I could read the commentary, but it's basically obfuscates or just equivocates rather than explains. You know, it's just sort of variation on a theme. There are the signs and the features, and one is. One it says, the grasp of the sign is the composite grasping. The grasp of the features occurs by separation. So, which is what I'm doing is making a bit of a, the grasp of the sign grasps everything at once. The grasp of the features takes up the individual aspects. So that's a,
so like an attractive human being versus a nice set of eyes or something like that.
Yes. Yeah, sort of. That's why I said that hands are beautiful, so too are the feet. So, I mean, it's just this. It's kind of. You know, it's a bit... I mean, these two grasps are found even in a single jhavana process, not to speak of different jhavana processes. Jhavanas are mind moments. I think there's 7 of the 14 mind moments that make up a fleeting thought. I mean, it's very... I can't remember the actual the Abhidhamma division, but it's very tiny. All right. He's worried about his robe. He was worried about his robe. Ended up being reborn in insect in his robe. Okay. So the next one is Samyutta 35, Sutta number 238, the simile of the vipers. Bhikkhus, suppose there were 4 vipers of fierce heat and deadly venom. Then a man would come along, wanting to live, not wanting to die, desiring happiness and averse to suffering. They would tell him, "Good man, these 4 vipers are of fierce heat and deadly venom. From time to time they must be lifted up. From time to time they must be bathed. From time to time they must be fed. From time to time they must be laid to rest. But if one or another of these vipers ever becomes angry with you, then, good man, you will meet death or deadly suffering. Do whatever has to be done, good man." Then bhikkhus, afraid of the 4 vipers of fierce heat and deadly venom, that man would flee in one direction or another. They would tell him, "Good man, 5 murderous enemies are pursuing you, thinking, wherever we see him, we will take his life right on the spot. Do whatever has to be done, good man." Then bhikkhus, afraid of the 4 vipers of fierce heat and deadly venom, and of the 5 murderous enemies, that man would flee in one direction or another. They would tell him, "Good man, a 6th murderer, an intimate companion, is pursuing you with a drawn sword, thinking, wherever I see him, I will cut off his head right on the spot. Do whatever has to be done, good man." Then bhikkhus, afraid of the 4 vipers of fierce heat and deadly venom, and of the 5 murderous enemies, and of the 6th murderer, the intimate companion with drawn sword, that man would flee in one direction or another. He would see an empty village. Whatever house he enters is void, deserted, empty. Whatever pot he takes hold of is void, hollow, empty. They would tell him, "Good man, just now, village attacking dacoits will raid this empty village. Do whatever has to..." Dacoits are thieves and gang members. "Do whatever has to be done, good man." Then bhikkhus, afraid of the 4 vipers of fierce heat and deadly venom, and of the 5 murderous enemies, and of the 6th murderer, the intimate companion with drawn sword, and of the village attacking dacoits, that man would flee in one direction or another. He would see a great expanse of water, whose near shore was dangerous and fearful, and whose further shore was safe and free from danger. But there would be no ferry boat or bridge for crossing over from the near shore to the far shore. Then the man would think, "There is this great expanse of water whose near shore is dangerous and fearful, and whose further shore is safe and free from danger. But there is no ferry boat or bridge for crossing over. Let me collect grass, twigs, branches, and foliage, and bind them together into a raft, so that by means of that raft, making an effort with my hands and feet, I can get safely across to the far shore." Then the man would collect grass, twigs, branches, and foliage, and bind them together into a raft, so that by means of that raft, making an effort with his hands and feet, he would get safely across to the far shore. Crossed over, gone beyond, the Brahman stands on high ground. I have made up this simile, bhikkhus, in order to convey a meaning. This is the meaning here. The 4 vipers of fierce heat and deadly venom, this is a designation for the four great elements, the earth element, the water element, the heat element, the air element. The five murderous enemies, this is a designation for the five aggregates subject to clinging, that is, material form, the material form aggregate subject to clinging, the feeling aggregate subject to clinging, the perception aggregate subject to clinging, the volitional formations aggregate subject to clinging, the consciousness aggregate subject to clinging. The sixth murderer, the intimate companion with drawn sword, this is a designation for delight and lust. The empty village, this is a designation for the six internal sense bases. If bhikkhus, a wise, competent, intelligent person, examines them by way of the eye, they appear to be void, hollow, empty. If he examines them by way of the ear, by the nose, by the tongue, by the body, by way of the mind, they appear to be void, hollow, empty. Village attacking dacoits, this is a designation for the six external sense bases. The eye bhikkhus is attacked by agreeable and disagreeable forms. The ear bhikkhus is attacked by agreeable and disagreeable forms. The nose is attacked by agreeable and disagreeable odors. The tongue is attacked, the body is attacked, the mind is attacked by agreeable and disagreeable mental phenomena. The great expanse of water, this is a designation for the four floods. The flood of sensuality, the flood of existence, the flood of views, and the flood of ignorance. Is there oga in Pali? The near shore, which is dangerous and fearful. This is a designation for identity, sakaya ditti. The further shore, which is safe and free from danger. This is a designation for nibbana. The raft, this is a designation for the Noble Eightfold Path, that is, right view, so on through to right concentration. Making effort with hands and feet, this is a designation for the arousing of energy. Crossed over, gone beyond, the Brahman stands on high ground. This is a designation for the Arahant. So, it's a pretty vivid discourse. Another unequivocal. Okay, next sutta. Sangyutta 35. Sutta 241. Simile of the log. It's a well-known sutta, but always good to hear. On one occasion, the Blessed One was dwelling at Kosambi, on the bank of the river Ganges. The Blessed One saw a great log being carried along by the current of the river Ganges. And he addressed the bhikkhus thus, "Do you see, bhikkhus, that great log being carried along by the current of the river Ganges?" "Yes, Venerable Sir." "If, bhikkhus, that log does not veer towards the near shore, does not veer toward the far shore, does not sink in midstream, does not get cast up on high ground, does not get caught by human beings, does not get caught by non-human beings, does not get caught in a whirlpool, and does not become inwardly rotten, it will slant, slope, and incline towards the ocean. For what reason?" "Because the current of the river Ganges slants, slopes, and inclines towards the ocean." "So too, bhikkhus, if you do not veer toward the near shore, do not veer toward the far shore, do not sink in midstream, do not get cast up on high ground, do not get caught by human beings, do not get caught by non-human beings, do not get caught in a whirlpool, and do not become inwardly rotten, you will slant, slope, and incline towards nibbana. For what reason? Because right view slants, slopes, and inclines towards nibbana." When this was said, a certain bhikkhu asked the Blessed One, "What, Venerable Sir, is the near shore? What is the far shore? What is sinking in midstream? What is getting cast up on high ground? What is getting caught by human beings? What is getting caught by non-human beings? What is getting caught in a whirlpool? What is inward rottenness? The near shore, bhikkhu, this is a designation for the six internal sense bases. The far shore, this is a designation for the six external sense bases. Sinking in midstream, this is a designation for delight and lust. Getting cast up on high ground, this is a designation for the conceit I am. And what bhikkhu is getting caught by human beings? Here, someone lives in association with lay people. He rejoices with them and sorrows with them. He is happy when they are happy and sad when they are sad, and he involves himself in their affairs and duties. This is called getting caught by human beings. And what bhikkhu is getting caught by non-human beings? Here, someone lives the holy life with the aspiration to be reborn into a certain order of devas, thinking, by this virtue or vow or austerity or holy life, I will become a deva or one among the devas. This is called getting caught by non-human beings. Getting caught in a whirlpool. This bhikkhu is a designation for the five cords of sensual pleasure. And what bhikkhu is inward rottenness? Here someone is immoral, one of evil character, of impure and suspect behavior, secretive in his acts, no ascetic though claiming to be one, not a celibate though claiming to be one, inwardly rotten, corrupt, depraved. This is called inward rottenness. Now on that occasion, the cowherd Nanda was standing near the Blessed One. He then said to the Blessed One, Venerable Sir, I will not veer towards the near shore. I will not veer towards the far shore. I will not sink in midstream. I will not get cast up on high ground. I will not get caught by human beings. I will not get caught by non-human beings. I will not get caught in a whirlpool. I will not become inwardly rotten. May I receive the going forth under the Blessed One. May I receive the higher ordination. In that case, Nanda, return the cows to their owners. The cows will go back of their own accord, Venerable Sir, out of attachment to the calves. Return the cows to their owners, Nanda. Then the cowherd Nanda returned the cows to their owners, came back to the Blessed One and said, The cows have been returned to their owners, Venerable Sir. May I receive the going forth unto the Blessed One. May I receive the higher ordination. Then the cowherd Nanda received the going forth unto the Blessed One, and he received the higher ordination. And soon, not long after his higher ordination, dwelling alone, withdrawn, diligent, ardent, and resolute, the Venerable Nanda became one of the Arahants. So, one of the classic suttas, very beautiful. That sense of just holding the course of the training.
Nanda come up again in the suttas?
Nanda?
Yeah.
Oh, it's a fairly common name.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a very common name. The next sutta that I'll read is Samyutta 35, sutta number 231. Bhikkhus, in regard to forms cognizable by the eye, if in any bhikkhu or bhikkhuni, lust still exists and has not been abandoned, if hatred still exists and has not been abandoned, if delusion still exists and has not been abandoned, then even trifling forms that enter into range of the eye, obsess the mind, not to speak of those that are prominent. For what reason? Because lust still exists and has not been abandoned. Hatred still exists and has not been abandoned. Delusion still exists and has not been abandoned. The same in regard to sounds, cognizable by the ear, of course through the nose, tongue, body. Same in regard to mental phenomena cognizable by the mind. Suppose, bhikkhus, There was a milksap tree, an asata or banyan or a pilaka or an udambara, fresh, young, tender. If a man breaks it here and there with a sharp axe, would sap come out? Yes, Venerable Sir. For what reason? Because there is sap. So too, bhikkhus, in regard to forms cognizable by the eye, of course through the six senses, even trifling forms that enter into range of the eye obsess the mind, not to speak of those that are prominent. For what reason? Because lust still exists and has not been abandoned, hatred still exists and has not been abandoned, delusion still exists and has not been abandoned. The same in regard to sounds cognizable by the ear, nose, tongue, body, mental phenomena cognizable by the mind. Because in regard to forms cognizable by the eye, if in any bhikkhu or bhikkhuni, lust does not exist and has been abandoned, if hatred does not exist and has been abandoned, if delusion does not exist and has been abandoned, then even prominent forms that enter into range of the eye do not obsess the mind, not to speak of those that are trifling. For what reason? Because lust does not exist and has been abandoned. Hatred does not exist and has been abandoned. Delusion does not exist and has been abandoned. The same in regard to sounds, smells, tastes, tangibles, mental phenomena cognizable by the mind. Suppose, bhikkhus, there was a milksap tree, an asata or a banyan or a pilaka or an udambara, dried up, desiccated, past its prime. If a man breaks it here and there with a sharp axe, would sap come out? No, Venerable Sir. For what reason? Because there is no sap. So too, bhikkhus, in regard to forms cognizable by the eye, even prominent forms that enter into range of the eye do not obsess the mind, not to speak of those that are trifling. For what reason? Because lust does not exist and has been abandoned. Hatred does not exist and has been abandoned. Delusion does not exist and has been abandoned. The same in regard to sounds, cognizable by the ear, and nose, tongue, body, mental phenomena cognizable by the mind.
So. It's nice to hear the word obsess rather than the extreme, not having experienced anything.
Right, yeah, I mean, it's absolutely the case that's the arahant. Because that's kind of the image sometimes that's portrayed, as if the arahant is some insensate loser, and it's not the case at all.
Well, what comes to mind is these kind of like Mahayana quotes and texts: the bell rings and it rouses the arahants from the super.
These are polemical texts. Okay, one last reading for today. This is Samyutta 35, Sutta number 234. On one occasion, the Venerable Ananda and the Venerable Udayi were dwelling at Kosambi in Kosita's park. Then, in the evening, the Venerable Udayi emerged from seclusion and approached the Venerable Ananda. He exchanged greetings with the Venerable Ananda, and when they had concluded their greetings and cordial talk, he sat down to one side and said to him, "Friend Ananda, in many ways the nature of this body has been declared, disclosed, and revealed by the Blessed One thus. For such a reason, this body is non-self. Is it possible to explain the nature of this consciousness in a similar way, to teach, proclaim, establish, disclose, analyze, and elucidate it thus. For such a reason, this consciousness is non-self. It is possible, friend Udayi. Doesn't I consciousness arise in dependence on the I and forms? Yes, friend. If the cause and condition for the arising of I consciousness would cease completely and totally without remainder, could I consciousness be discerned? No, friend. In this way, friend, this has been declared, disclosed, and revealed by the Blessed One thus. For such a reason, this consciousness is non-self. Doesn't ear consciousness arise in dependence on the ear and sounds? And of course, through the six senses, doesn't mind consciousness arise in dependence on the mind and mental phenomena? Yes, friend, if the cause and condition for the arising of mind consciousness would cease completely and totally without remainder, could mind consciousness be discerned? No, friend. In this way too, friend, this has been declared, disclosed, and revealed by the Blessed One thus. For such a reason, this consciousness is non-self. Suppose, friend, a man needing heartwood, seeking heartwood, wandering in search of heartwood, would take a sharp axe and enter a forest. There he would see the trunk of a large plantain tree, straight, fresh, without a fruit bud core. He would cut it down at the root, cut off the crown, and unroll the coil. As he unrolls the coil, he would not find even softwood, let alone heartwood. So too, a bhikkhu does not recognize either a self or anything belonging to a self in these six bases for contact. Since he does not recognize anything thus, he does not cling to anything in the world. Not clinging, he is not agitated. Being unagitated, he personally attains nibbana. He understands, destroyed his birth, the holy life has been lived. What had to be done has been done. There is no more for this state of being. That's a very, again, this is quite straightforward. Let's say this sense of bringing a kind of bit of logic to the investigation of the of phenomena of one's contact with the senses, the contact with the world around one, so that there is a clear understanding of the nature of that, and that sense that non-self is not some kind of esoteric thing; it's experiential.